What are some current strategies we have for addressing greenhouse gas reductions, as well as some future activities that are planned in Florida? And in Florida, our statewide climate change action activities really began with Charlie Crist, our governor, having a statewide summit a year ago in July in Tampa. And what he did is he convened leaders from the business, government, the academic community, the advocacy groups to get together to talk about potential threats to Florida from climate change. And at the end of the summit, he signed three executive orders. One was leadership by example, and he established reduction targets for state agencies, established a carbon scorecard where agencies had to report on their carbon footprint and their progress in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and also directed them to engage in a number of activities, you know, to help achieve those targets. For example, you know, by changing their building management activities, fleet management activities, and so forth. They also established by executive order some statewide reduction targets and directed state agencies to adopt various rules to help to achieve that. For example, our Department of Environmental Protection was directed to adopt the California CAFE standards, as well as adopting a statewide diesel reduction standard. And the final executive order created the Energy and Climate Change Action Team, which was tasked for developing a comprehensive approach to greenhouse gas emissions in Florida, and I'll be talking a little bit more about that later. And then the governor last month had another statewide summit that was more focused on how we can encourage the development of greener technologies in Florida and greening our business community. So first I wanted to review some basic data about greenhouse gas emissions. This chart right here takes a look at the history and trends with emissions. And as you can see, greenhouse gas emissions are expected to increase in over time. And the primary source is from the electrical supply sector. But in Florida, the transportation sector follows fairly close behind, which accounts for 42% of the CO2 emissions in Florida in 2005. The next slide here takes a look at the transportation sector emissions by fuel source. And what you can see here is that on-road gasoline consumption accounts for approximately two-thirds of the emissions, and on-road diesel consumption accounts for another 15%. And again, you can see the trend is for increasing emissions over time for the transportation sector. And why is it occurring? Well, the simple answer is that we're driving more in Florida. Well, we prepared this chart for the Climate Change Action Team, and it was a real revelation to them. I can't talk either. It was a surprise. And part of the issue is they have this climate change group, and they got over 20 people. Guess how many people had a transportation background? Nada, zero. So they thought, transportation sector, no problem. We're just going to reduce VMT. And they saw this chart and they said, uh-oh, we got a problem here. Well, you know, and even though we've recently seen a reduction in VMT due to the increase in gas prices, we expect long-term that we're going to see an increase in VMT in Florida. Why is that? Well, quite simply is that we're a high-growth state. You know, it's estimated that over the next 20 years, half of the population growth in the United States is going to occur in California, Texas, and Florida. So we're simply going to have more people, you know, in Florida who will need to travel. You know, we'll see increasing in freight, you know, providing goods and services to our growing population and our economy. And a second part of that is that people are driving more. You know, we'll see what impact, you know, increased prices has on that. But traditionally, we've been driving more. And also, our trip lengths have been getting longer as our urban areas have been growing and becoming more sprawling. So I wanted to talk about what Florida is trying to do right now to reduce the, you know, emissions in the transportation sector. But first I wanted to talk about what are we trying to accomplish. And the first thing is we want to make sure that the transportation sector does make a contribution to achieving the governor's greenhouse gas emission reduction targets. And second of all, we also want to, you know, adapt and help mitigate the impacts to our communities, to our environment, as well as to our infrastructure from potential impacts from climate change to the state. This map right here shows what the impact would be to Florida from a 1 meter rise in the sea level. And you can see we have impacts all around the coast. So long-term investment in condos on the coastline, not so much. Buy condos in Disney World, better investment. As you've heard, there often is considered to be a three-part strategy to reducing transportation sector contribution to climate change. Part of it is improving fuel efficiency, and the governor, as you know, had directed our Department of Environmental Protection to adopt the CAFE standards. Some folks think of increasing transportation system efficiency as a fourth leg stool. Florida, we're a little different. We just kind of put it under there under fuel efficiency. And part of that, our thinking is that, you know, if we can reduce congestion, we can reduce the delay on our transportation system, that allows vehicles to operate more efficiently, consume, you know, less gasoline, and produce fewer emissions, which is good for greenhouse gas emissions as well as air quality as a whole. And this next graph here illustrates why improving the transportation efficiency is important. This takes a look at a few trends in Florida. The growth in lane miles in our transportation system has been growing on average about 1.1%. Our population growth has been much faster historically, growing about 2.3%. And daily VMT has been increasing even higher, about 3.5% historically. And unfortunately, what that results is increased delay on our transportation system. More cars, more trucks sitting idling in traffic, spewing more emissions. So transportation efficiency is an important component for air quality as well as greenhouse gas emissions. The department has been working with local governments, law enforcement, and our other partners to work on reducing congestion. In the area of non-recurring sources of congestion, we've been trying to improve our incident response time so we can clear, you know, accidents and other incidents from the lanes faster. We've also been working to improve our work zone management so we can reduce delay around our construction sites, as well as providing more and better information to drivers about incidents, construction, and weather so that people can make more informed decisions, for example, through our 511 system. We've also been focusing on reoccurring sources of congestion, making investments to try to relieve, you know, bottlenecks, and working with our partners to improve traffic signalization. I saw a study recently that said that if we improve traffic signalization, we can reduce, you know, air pollution emissions by 1/5, and as well as save each household on an average five tanks full of gasoline a year. That sounds like a winning strategy to me, especially with gas prices about $4 a gallon. In addition, we've been working on freeway management. We were engaged in a pilot project on I-95 with managed lanes or express lane project, and there's going to be a presentation tomorrow morning where they'll be talking a little bit more about that. And if you've been driving around the Orlando area on our our turnpike or expressways, you can see that we've been making substantial investments in electronic trolling and open roll towing so people don't have to stop to pay tolls. The second strategy is reducing the carbon content of fuel. We're obviously not a major player in that, but we are a consumer of alternative fuels. We have 42 fueling stations located throughout the state, and about half of them offer biodiesel. And 37 will are currently providing E10. And other state agencies can use our fueling stations if they so choose. And we've also recently started selling E85 to customers who have flex fuel vehicles at our Turnpike service centers. Early this summer, that was offered over to the Turkey Lake Service Plaza. And by the end of the summer, we anticipate offering it at two additional service plazas. I believe it's going to be at Fort Pierce and Pompano. The third strategy is trying to reduce growth in travel, and I'll be focusing more on the transportation piece of that. And that's really more of a long-term strategy. As we were discussing earlier, you know, if we can change traveler behavior, we can encourage, you know, shifts to other modes, less trips, and perhaps more efficient trips. But in looking at this, we have to recognize that the preferred way of traveling in the United States is by single-occupant vehicle. About 80% of work trips right now are by single-occupant vehicle in Florida. So changing this behavior is going to be quite of a challenge for us. But certainly there are employer initiatives to reduce commuting. Our commuter assistance program works with employers to provide options such as van pooling, carpooling, telecommuting. Changes in availability and pricing of parking certainly is a tool. Less parking, more expensive parking could encourage folks to drive less, as well as making additional investments in bike, ped, and transit facilities to provide more travel choices. But the key there is you really need to have compatible land uses. You just can't simply throw out more buses on the road and expect people, you know, to have, they'll ride them. You need to have, you know, transit-oriented development and so forth. And I wanted to briefly cover, that we are working with local governments or regional partners to encourage and expand the amount of transit and passenger rail services available in Florida. We've got transit New Start projects started in North, Central, and South Florida. We have major transit studies, again, all through the state. And I just heard this morning that we got approval from the FTA to go to final design on the Central Florida Commuter Rail Project. So the end's in sight, and those of you who work with FTA, you know they don't like to approve anything. So we're very excited that we got the go-ahead on that one. Pricing strategies are another way of trying to can be effective for reducing congestion, as well as VMT, particularly in peak hours. And as I mentioned, the department's engaged in the I-95 Express Lanes project, and that'll get kick-started shortly. We're also long-term, taking a look at a mileage-based tax structure is something that's under consideration, but we're really in the early stages of evaluating that. Also, what's important are freight-specific strategies, particularly since, Florida as well as nationally, truck VMT has been increasing at a much higher rate than automobile VMT. So, we're working with our partners to look at modal alternatives. We've got the rail systems plan being updated that's looking at both freight and passenger rail options. We're trying to make investments to relieve freight bottlenecks. And as I mentioned, we have the new rule that is trying to aim at reduce truck idling. And we're also trying to consider options for having truck-only lanes where that would be appropriate. Next, I wanted to switch gears and talk about what are some future activities relating to climate change in Florida. I mentioned the governor's Energy and Climate Change Action Team. They completed phase one of their work. They issued a report last November, and they developed a variety of recommendations for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, many of which were incorporated into legislation that passed last session, which I'll be talking about in a few minutes. They're currently engaged in phase two of their work, and what they did is they established six subcommittees to help them develop and refine some recommendations, and there are three of them that relate to transportation, adaptation, another one relating to government policy, and the third one relating to transportation and land use. That report is due in October, so the work is still ongoing and in progress. And I wanted to mention that all the state agencies are providing technical support to the action team, providing studies and trying to help with the drafting and editing of the language, which is something I heard was kind of unusual in talking with my partners in other states. I was really surprised to find out that there were other climate change action teams that were developing transportation recommendations, and the state DOT was not involved, And so it's good to see that we're at the table here in Florida. And the last thing I wanted to mention was the 2008 legislation that passed. House Bill 7135 addressed energy and climate change. It was a very long bill. It was over 200 pages. I will not go through a dramatic reading of the bill today, but I just wanted to highlight a few of the items. They did authorize the rulemaking to establish a cap-and-trade system of motor vehicle emission standards, increases in building energy efficiency, and they also created the Florida Energy and Climate Commission. The action team's work is going to conclude in October, so this commission will then pick up the work and continue. They also had some provisions regarding the Metropolitan Planning Organization planning process. For example, it now requires them to consider strategies for integrating transportation and land use planning to provide for more sustainable development as well as reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Then another bill passed, House Bill 687, and it was a bit of a surprise. No one really realized that it had climate change provisions until the day after session. Does that ever happen in your states, you know, where you wake up the other day and say, they did what? Well, that was one of these bills. And what they had is some provisions relating to local government comprehensive planning requirements. The law now requires that the comp plans and their future land use element, it has to discourage urban sprawl, promote energy efficient land use, and include greenhouse gas emission reduction strategies. And also the traffic circulation element needs to include strategies for reducing transportation sector greenhouse gas emissions. And in the conservation housing element, they need to include energy and conservation. Local governments are very nervous about this. As I recall, I don't think there's any other state that requires this, but I think it's going to be an opportunity, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds, because I think this provides a new impetus for local governments and NPOs to really work together on linking transportation and land use, not only, you know, to encourage more transit-oriented types of development, but to address climate change as well as air pollution in general. And the last slide here, and you may have heard this morning, all the presentations will be posted on the website by the end of the conference. You can go to this website to get some more information about what FLOR is doing in this regard. And I'd like to close with a safety message. Remember, buckle up every time, every trip.